Hey, listeners, ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I'm just a small Uruguayan in Montevideo, you know, speaking one of the top celebrities in the U.S., the biggest country in the world, and it's so nice.
It's wonderful you to come on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literally. It's me, Rob Lowe. Today, we have Nando Parado on the show. Nando Parado is one of the Uruguayan rugby team members who crashed in the Andes in 1972 and for 72 days survived. Eventually, they all had to eat and used their fallen comrades as food. He then, with one other man, hiked out of the Andes Mountains and eventually found help. It's a very famous story. It's been documented in many books. Currently, the movie Society of the Snow is out and is nominated for an Oscar and is one of the best movies I've ever seen. And this man's story, it defies words. This is a doozy. Pull up a seat. Fernando Parado. Well, thank you for coming on the show. I mean, the journey that has brought us here together today is beyond imagining, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think the journey that has brought me to be here, I shouldn't be sitting down in this chair. I shouldn't be speaking to you. I shouldn't be alive. I shouldn't have a second part of my only life. But I'm here. So let's make the best of it and enjoy the time that we have together, because time is, for me, the most important thing. Time doesn't come back. That's the biggest richness that you can have, time.
At the darkest moments on the mountain, my sense is, and I watched the movie last night, and I've read some of your quotes over the years. There were many times where you thought you were dead. And once you die like that, you accept death. You have accepted its inevitability and that it's upon you. When you get life then, how does it change your view of life?
You know, I died many times there. I died on a plane crash. I died of injuries. I died of suffocation. I died of exhaust, of being too exhausted. I died of having any chance of crossing those mountains. And I know why I did it. I'm here. And I came back to a different world. I thought that the world would be different when I came back. And you know, when you die, what happens? When you die, I came back, I resurrected. You know, I came back almost 3 months after being dead. My photograph was on the mantelpiece with my mother, my sister, they were also dead. And I came back, and you know what happens when you die in the world? Nothing happens. Absolutely nothing. The world keeps on going. Cars are on the street, people in the supermarkets, and I was dead. You know, how can girls live without me? How can people go to the beach? I'm dead. And that's it woke me up. It told me that I was not the center of the world and I would never be, you know? So I came back from the dead and the world kept on going. So when I see people that are full of themselves, I've met a lot of celebrities, you know, sports stars, politicians, you know, royal families, whatever. And I look at them and say, should they know that they die and nothing happens? Absolutely nothing happens. So I was very lucky that my father was a man with a great common sense. And he said, Nando, the day I arrived back home after my family had died, I resurrected. And he said, Nando, we cannot modify the past. There's no way. We cannot do that. But let's not lose the second part of our only life. Let's remember with love, with tenderness. But let's not suffer all our lives because of what happened. Bad things happen in life. No, to many people, there are wars, illnesses, you know, tragedies, accidents. Why should we be different? We were stuck with this story, he said, but let's not lose what's left.
How does one not let a tragedy define them? There are people, and we all have seen them, read about them, maybe we have some in our lives, where they never can get truly beyond whatever that tragedy is. They're a victim of this, they're a victim of that, or somebody did something bad to them, or they had whatever it is. They let that define them. And what do you think the hallmark is of somebody who moves on?
I don't know if we are different from North Americans, Europeans, Germans, I don't know, Danish, Canadians, or we are South Americans. We have maybe a different education, maybe a different family, a tight bond, very, very, very tight. In the US, in Canada, in many places in the world, when the kids finish high school, they go to college and they only see their families once a year or twice a year.
Right.
We kept living. This is a small country. We live in our homes. I've been living in my home for 45 years. You know, my father lived two blocks away. We kept a very tight bond. And maybe we accept that life has a tragedy. When you come back from a very strange and difficult survival experience, could be the war, could be an accident, could be illness, your life will be divided in two, before and after that tragedy. And there is a very dark place in between, and it's in your power to get out of there. Maybe the help that I've got from my family for so many years, helped me to cross that black bridge more than if you lived a lot of years alone. I know we are very family tight bonds here. And thanks to my father, thanks to my friends, I was able to go ahead. You know, I didn't mourn. I can be very sincere to you. maybe I'm very pragmatic like my father. I never had a nightmare. I never had a bad dream about the Andes, even from the first night. And I don't dwell on that. I don't want to know why. Why? I mean, I'm so happy that I am alive. I've spoken to soldiers that came back from the war, and maybe in their platoon, 5, 6, or 8 men died during the war, and they came back alive, maybe without a finger or without a hand, but they are alive. And I say, you should rejoice that you're alive. Don't lose the second part of your life thinking, why did I survive and my friends didn't? I mean, there's no answer to that. There are questions that will never have an answer, and you keep looking for answers, and you get inside a very strange place and you need a shrink.
Yes. When you think of your friends that you lost those many years ago on the mountain, A, how often do you think of them, and what are your thoughts?
We were very tight friends. I knew most of them since first grade in my school. We went through the same school, high school together. The best sportmen started to play rugby. We played rugby in high school, then on the national league. And we went out on the weekends with the girls and to the parties. And we were living our lives. You know, we were 19, 20. What do you do when you're 19, 20?
You're good looking, you know, Uruguayans. You're out there doing your thing.
Yeah, we were not university professors. So we were living our lives. One of my friends, her parents were divorced under very strange circumstances. So he lived in my home like 3 or 4 days a week. He was like my brother. He did that for 2 years. He died beside me on the plane. He was sitting beside me on the next seat. And I remember them with candor, with friendship. And I know and I understand that at some point we were all on the same boat. You know, when the plane crashed, which is a miracle that of the 45 people, 29 survived. Of those 29, 24 without a single scratch, which is a miracle. There's no way. This, you can fall from a motorcycle, crash on a car. 29 guys survived. The only plane crash in history where there are survivors when a plane crashes at cruising speed and cruising altitude. You know, the physical forces that are on chain there are non-survivable. And the guys who survived the impacts, we were already bonded before the crash. So we knew that we were in a very difficult situation, impossible situation. We were dead men walking. And because we knew each other so much, this is a story that cleverness, you know, or courage wouldn't have saved us. And I have to tell you, love and trust saved us. Love to each other, trust into each other beyond what you can do on a normal life. You trusted your friends with your life over there. And that saved us. We trusted each other. So when I look back and I see that 8, 9 of the ones who survived the plane crash are not here with me, I could have been one of them. Nobody chose. You know, when we made a pact and we embraced ourselves over there, we were on the same boat. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew who would survive. So I remember them with candor, with friendship, with love. And I also know I could have been one of them. And because I wasn't one of them, I have a family now. I created life. I have daughters. I have grandchildren. They wouldn't be alive if I hadn't done what I did. So it's life. It's sad. It's like when you go to the war. Why do some guys die and why do someone live? It's God's will, it's destiny, it's life and death. Nobody knows.
And you believe it in the end, it is unknowable.
It's unknowable. I mean,
it's unknowable.
Yeah. Nobody can know who would live and who would die on these circumstances.
I have a couple of practical questions, having watched the movie. Why did the plane crash? Was it weather? Was it a malfunction? That was very unclear to me, and I'm curious. Do you even know?
Yeah, so many studies have been done here and by the Uruguayan Air Force and engineers and flight experts. this was a combination, like every plane accident is a combination of factors. No, mm-hmm. The yep. plane is a plane designed, created, built to fly on flatlands. On the Netherlands, on Africa, it's a twin turboprop engine plane, not very powerful.
Yep.
Full of people, full of passengers, full of cargo, you know, the equipment, everything over there, flying over the most incredible and highest mountains in South America, in bad weather, with an inexperienced crew. So if you add all those things,
yes,
I mean, what's the result? The result is that the inexperienced crew flying on bad weather on an underpowered plane crashed because it was a pilot mistake. They thought they were over Chile. They didn't take into account the headwind and everything. And they descended in the middle of the mountains when they thought they would be like 150 miles further west. Pilot mistake, and you add a lot of things behind that.
It's an incredible story. I remember reading the what is it, Paul's Peer Reed's book?
Of course, people read, yeah. Alive.
Alive, I read it the year it came out. So I've been familiar with it for a long time. I the notion that you were unconscious in the impact, and that being in the cold saved you from your brain injury. Isn't that what you?
Yeah.
What we think today.
Yeah, I was probably of the survivors after the initial plane crash. I had the biggest injuries. My head was broken in four places, was the size of a basketball, and I didn't have any physical motions. I was covered with blood. They thought I was dead, so they pulled me into the pile of the dead bodies over there, no? And the cold, my injuries were non-survivable. All the experts, they scanned my head afterwards and they said, it's a miracle. But nature did what science does now. When you have a very big head trauma, they freeze your head so that the brain doesn't explode, but they don't freeze your body because you'll die. They put the lowest temperature you can on your brain, on your head, and they do not hydrate you. They don't give you any water, nothing. My head was on the snow. They didn't touch me for 3 days. They thought I was dead. The snow did what the biggest and the most creative neurosurgeon could do now. And then after 3 days, I started to move. And they say, hey, Nando, it's alive. And they pulled me from the pile and they sat me inside the fuselage. And I came back from a very dark place. I was dead, Rob. I was dead. I know what death is. I know. I've been there. It's black. Blacker than black. It's very black. And I could think and say, I am dead. This is dead. Finally. Black. So black. And then about 2 days later, I said, I'm dead. This is death. But I cannot be dead because I'm thirsty. If I'm thirsty, I needed water. I didn't know what had happened. I couldn't see. I couldn't open my eyes. I didn't know where I was. It was very black, but I was thirsty. So I said, if I'm thirsty, I need water. I'm alive, but where am I? I was in a coma. I was such deep.
Wow.
So profound that I didn't know what happened. Then 2 days later, I started to open my eyes and I realized something terrible had happened.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky? Same day, or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment. There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California, and I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crewneck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crewneck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
Do you remember the first time you had enough awareness to realize what had happened and where you were? What was that moment like?
The first things I saw and I listened to and I heard were voices from my friends, very close to me, very gentle faces. And I remember very gentle eyes, very close to me. I said, "Nando, can you hear me? Nando, are you okay? The plane crashed. We crashed." So I opened my eyes to that environment, you know. And I couldn't really understand, but I saw these faces very close to me. And maybe 2 hours later or 3 hours later, I saw these cables dangling from the roof. And I said, I was not alone here. Mama, where is my mother? And Susie and Panchito. I mean, they were my closest human beings in my life, with my father. And what happens? The youngest guy was 17 there, Rob. The average age was 19, 20. When you're that young, death is so far away. But these guys had an intensive course. They had buried their friends. They had taken out the fuselage, destroyed bodies, you know, something they never thought they would have done. And they said, "Nando, your mother is dead." Straight to me. "Panchito, your best friend, your brother is dead. And Susie's, she's very badly injured. She's laying on the floor there behind the cockpit." So the first physical move that I did was crawling to my sister. She was 18 years old. She was 18. I remember she had a very light dress with flowers, and her feet, she didn't have any shoes on. Her feet were purple, you know, like violet. And I embraced her. She couldn't move. She couldn't speak. She could only look at me with her eyes. She could only move her eyes. Probably her injuries were so big inside the body. I was not a doctor. I didn't know what had happened, but she had internal injuries. She didn't have blood. And I stayed with her. I put some snow in her mouth a few times so that she could drink water. And I stayed with her. And that night, you know, I was embraced to her. And I felt at one moment that she left. You know, like something left her, that she died in my arms. And you can say, "Nando, how can you be so without feelings. I'm not without feelings. I have the same feelings you have. But the circumstances create different environments. It was different if she died in my arms on a car accident in the corner of my neighborhood.
Yeah.
She died there, and I couldn't cry. And I said, Nando, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? I didn't understand myself. What's wrong with you? But decades later, I understood that the brain protects you and doesn't allow you to think and go into emotional things about sorrow, you know, about pain, and only focuses on survival. And I said, if I lose, imagine, how could I be so stupid, so cold? And I say, I thought, Nando, if you cry, you will lose water. You will lose salt, and you would need this to survive here. So those are the circumstances that I talk about.
Your story is unbelievable. I was struck with when the different the expeditions to the tail of the plane. I'm a skier. I've been in the backcountry. I've hiked in mountains and been in drifts up to my thighs and stupid little ski resorts. And I know how uncomfortable, being at altitude, I can't even imagine. You guys are in loafers, and what you had when you got on the plane in 70 degree weather, and now it got as cold as minus 31 at night. What was the walk like? I can't even imagine it.
You know, I've been once to a meeting in Aspen with five of the best climbers in the U.S. They invited me for a meeting there with my wife. These five guys had done all the 14 8,000 meter peaks in the world, the 24,000. They had been there, and they couldn't understand. They asked me so many questions. They couldn't understand. After we spoke for about 4 hours, because they were fascinated, and I was fascinated of speaking with them, they stood up and they said, let's make a toast for the best climber in the world, the one who has achieved what we dream of achieving. You crossed the Andes Mountain, probably one of the biggest mountain traverses in history, without any equipment, without knowledge. And you know why you did it? Because of your ignorance, they said. Had you known what you were going to face, you wouldn't have started, because it was impossible. No crampons, no piolets, no ropes, no gloves. How do you do it? I mean, it's impossible. We know that you did it because you are here, but I don't think we could have done it in the same position that you were. No clothes, no gloves, no crampons, no piolets, no ice axes. It was impossible. So the only way I can tell you, Rob, that we did it, when I reached the top of the first mountain and I thought I would see a small town, valleys, you know, I had this image of the valleys in Europe with the small towns in them. You know, this is very different. This is rugged. This is the Andes. When I got to the top and I saw what was on the other side, I knew I was dead. There's no way. It's like dropping you in the middle of the ocean. Where do you swim to? With no life vest, no nothing. Where do you swim to? So I understood there that I saw in my mind a big gate, a big door, you know? And it's an invisible door, an invisible gate, that you cross into death. When you cross it, you're dead. So nothing matters. Whatever you do, you're already dead. And I told Roberto, we're dead. Let's go. I won't stop until my face hits the ice. I won't stop until I'm dead. And he said, we have done so many things together. Let's die together. And he was looking into my eyes. Let's die together. And we started. And 8 days later, we found help. Why did we do it? I don't know. But if you run the Ironman three times in a row, and you get tired. You stop and you go home. Here you stop, you're dead. If you stop, you're dead. There's no, let's rest for half a day. No, let's go. Keep on going, keep on going, keep on going. 1, 2, 10, 15, 16, 18 hours nonstop. Climbing, falling, snow, ice, crevasses. And I look back and I say, Nando, Rob, even now, I cannot answer that. Why? I don't know. Maybe my father was a lighthouse. I wanted to go back to him. And I thought a lot about him all through this gruesome trek. I thought a lot about my father. And I prayed a lot. Those two things. I prayed Hail Marys. I'm Catholic. As a mantra, in order not to think what was ahead, because I didn't know what was ahead. I didn't know if it was one day or 20 days. I didn't know if I would last 2 days or I would die on the day, 1 week from there.
Was the lack of knowledge terrifying or liberating or both? Because I've heard that a human being not knowing when, literally getting at the point where they don't know when they're going to eat again, is among the most terrifying things. So I wonder, we all are petrified of what we don't know. But I also kind of think maybe at a certain point, maybe it's liberating. What's your thought on that?
It's an interesting question, but I think it liberates you from the pressure of succeeding.
Right. Yes. Yes.
It liberates you. Whatever happens, I'm doing all I can.
It goes back to what you were saying about, in a way, ignorance.
Yes.
It's like, I'm just going to do it and I don't know any better.
And because you have plans in your life, or anybody, any human being in this planet, they have plans and they look into the future. And if they don't arrive to that place in the future where they thought they would be, they think they have failed. But no, being alive is already a triumph. And fighting for what you want is a triumph. But not achieving what you want is not failure, because not everybody achieves what they want. All those slogans, you can do it, Yaman, you can do it, everything is possible if you try, the power is inside you. Give me a break. Things are impossible sometimes. Things are impossible.
I'm fascinated also with the movie is so amazing, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, because I want everybody to see it. And how, just trying to sleep in the cold, it feels like you never slept. It feels like, did you ever sleep, or was it just more like passing out? I just don't understand in those temperatures, in those clothes. And again, you're in clothes you wore to get on until you find the stuff in the tail section, which is, thank God for that. But, you know, that's weeks into your time.
You don't sleep like on a bed. And
no, for sure.
It's very tight. And at the beginning, there are 29 people on the same spot. It's not very big. So one is on top of the other one. And it's very cold. You know, it's very cold. And you shiver. And you're embraced with somebody with a face very close. And you say, come on, breathe, breathe. Give me your breath.
You were always very certain that you would do whatever it took for you to survive when others weren't willing to feed. They were not going to eat. How did you come to that persuasion? And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that. And you could almost, I think shame is one of the most dangerous things that human beings can carry with them. And I think that there, you could make a case that those that wouldn't do it were worried about the shame of it, which eventually would have killed them.
Yeah, you know, shame is a fantastic word. And you should have shame if you do something that allows you to be seen as somebody who has done something. That somebody could use that word. What we did was the most beautiful thing you can imagine. This is 51 years ago. Transplants were in their infancy at that age. Now everybody has a transplant of any kind. Over there, it was very at the beginning. And we did a pact. You told about hunger a few minutes ago. Hunger is the most terrible fear of the human being. Not knowing when you're going to eat again, it's the most primal, incredible fear a human being can develop in their minds. And as we are the biggest experts in this subject in the world, interviewed by psychologists, hospitals, writers, professors, we know about this very, very much. And what happens when there's no food inside? Being over there stranded in the Andes, it's like being in Venus, Mars, the moon. There's absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. And you will never understand the deep anxiety of hunger until your body starts to feed upon itself. Because you breathe, you move your arms, you walk. Where does that energy come from if you don't eat? From your body. So you eat your fat, you eat your muscles, your body eats them. Then you feel that your liver is going and you feel you're auto-consuming yourself. And all that information goes to your brain. You know, all that information goes to your brain. And your brain says, Nando, you have to survive. Survival instinct. You don't want to die. You're too young. You don't want to die. So when I saw that the situation was absolutely irreversible, that there was no way out after you've spent a week without eating anything and the helicopters didn't come. And then the radio told us that the search was abandoned and we were abandoned to die. We were dead men walking. And I told Carlitos, who was the youngest guy, sleeping with me one night, very tight, shaking both of us because of the cold. And I said, Carlitos, I'm going to try to get out of here. You're crazy. He says, how? I'll have to wait for the summer. But the summer is 2 months away. But when the snow melts and the ice melts, I can climb these mountains. What are you going to do? I'm going to eat. What are you going to eat? We have proteins here. We have the dead bodies of our friends. They're already dead. The soul has left. And that's what we're going to do. Maybe I was the first one to bring it out to Carlitos, but I knew, and later speaking with all my friends, that they were all going through that process in their minds. Because when there is only one solution, there's only one. When there are two, you can pick between the two. When there's only one, and we made a pact, a beautiful pact. We put our hands together, 29 guys, and said, if I die, you have the permission to use my body so you can go back to our families and tell them how much we miss them, how much we love them. And at that moment, all the guys who died and all the guys who survived were on the same instant in this infinity of life. Nobody knew who would live or die. So we made a pact with our conscience, with our heart, with our friendship going forward. And this pact was the beginning, decades later, of us working with the government in our country, you know? So there is a law now in Uruguay that every Uruguayan is a donor.
Wow.
If you don't want to donate your organs, you have to make a paper with a notary. We have saved more than 700 lives in these years with this law.
That's so amazing.
People look at us, oh, these guys who use their friends to eat. Yeah. But that's the first layer of the story. How many more layers are below that? How many lives have been saved? How many lives are alive because we came out of there? Our sons, daughters, grandchildren. 16 guys came out. Now we are more than 180.
That's right. You know? That's right. It is true. In those days, organ donor, I don't even think it was on anyone's radar and being an organ donor at all.
No, I mean, it was something that it was not in the news, not in the way people lived on a civilized world. Maybe only doctors after an accident and a body could be a donor. Even sometimes they didn't ask and they say, okay, let's take this heart or this and maybe you can save a life. But being a donor, it's a fantastic thing. Organ donation is done on a very dark moment, silent moment, and hard moment, always. Always, because the donor has a family also, and the family is there and say, okay, this beautiful human being that died because of an accident, because of something, is going to give life to another human being. So organ donation is fantastic.
Looking for a sparkling, clean bathroom without so much hassle? Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner is here to revolutionize your cleaning future. Just spray today, rinse tomorrow, and voila! Enjoy a sparkling, clean shower and tub without any scrubbing. It's the secret to a hassle-free, clean bathroom that many are discovering. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner has proven its effectiveness on shower glass, fixtures, tiles, and more, ensuring everything shines with minimal effort. This product has gained a loyal following thanks to its once-a-week application that makes it a standout in the cleaning aisle. Join the ranks of satisfied users who enjoy more me time and less clean time with Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner, available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. It's the perfect choice for anyone wanting to simplify their cleaning routine. Don't miss out on a chance to transform your bathroom cleaning with just one application a week. Pick up a bottle of Wet and Forget Weekly Shower Cleaner today and join the thousands who've already made the switch to effortless clean. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. I know that for me, people are out, people are about, people want to do stuff, and we want to do it, but it can be a grind. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Rob Lowe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Rob Lowe.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high performance EVs. They're certainly out here there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV, so the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires. Nando, what was it like? In the movie, it's depicted as you are at a stream, you're getting some water, and you look up and there is the shepherd. Is that what it was? All literally an apparition appearing.
Listen, The Society of the Snow, which is a majestic movie, for me, the movie of the decade, not because of her story, because of the how beautiful it is done, how strong it is. It's epic, it's sad, it's tragic, but at the end, it's elegant on a tragedy, which is very difficult to put, elegance on a tragedy. And this That's is right. because of the story and a great director like Juan Antonio Bayona. So this is a movie that goes beyond. It has been seen by more than 150 million people. I have emails of people that have seen it 6 times, 8 times. A group of girls, they say, we have seen it more than 30 times. And they were small girls because this movie brings hope to young people now. Young people want everything so fast, success so fast. And if they don't get that success very fast, they fall into depression. And I'm useless. Yeah. I'm not what I should be. I mean, things take time. Believe in yourself. But things take time. You know. And this movie brings love, brings hope to people, and shows that you have to fight for things in life. So it's just been, there's a clamor, there's a something in the world about this movie that's fantastic.
I was shocked by the majesty of it. To have the scope that you're talking about, the majesty, and also at the end of the day, it's people trapped in a fuselage on a mountain. So it's also very tiny, and yet it's also so huge. And the technical aspects of doing it, of being in the snow with just things you don't think about unless you make movies, is how did you guys get up on the how'd they put the actors up on the ridge with no snow tracks behind them?
Yeah.
Or in front of them, I should say. I mean, if you do more than 2 takes, you have all of your footprints from the previous take.
I already think about that scene, and I think you thought the same thing. You know, they're walking on the ridge and they're coming, but there's pristine white snow in front of them. And
yes, that ridge, that shot of the ridge you and Roberto were walking on the ridge is unbelievable. Well, there were a lot of unbelievable shots.
But it was shot on the exact same places that we crossed. So that's...
No, I didn't know that, really?
It's exactly the same. I mean, Bayona is the master of reality. Even anything that's on the movie is perfect. And it was shot in the Andes,
really?
Exactly on the Maitenes Valley, on the ridge that we crossed with Roberto, exactly.
I didn't know that. I had no idea. Well, that makes it even more incredible.
It's shot exactly there. So that gives an impression of what we really went through. It was not easy. And I have to be sincere with you. I think when somebody does something without wanting to do it, and you look back in the times, only you know how much it took you to do that. Only you know, Rob, how much it took you to be there, sitting, creating this podcast. It wasn't easy, if you look back. For me, it wasn't easy, but I cannot understand, even now, how I did it. You know, even now. But I'm here, so it was feasible in a way. You know?
I am so glad that you're here, not because I'm glad that you're alive, but I'm glad that you're able to share your message with survivors, because I can only imagine how important that is to people, and you're so articulate about it. And this movie, I urge everybody to see. It's just spectacular, and knowing that it's shot in the exact same place is just unbelievable.
You know, I'm a television producer. I produce documentaries. I produce TV programs, all of that. And I don't want to be over the top, no. But I have told some of my friends and some people that go to the movies or watch it, because this is the best movie you will see in your life. You will watch in your life and say, come on, there are so many movies. And they come back to me and say, you were right. You were right. So it's a good movie.
It's an epic. And you know what? Just before we go, there are so many tiny grace notes in it that are so subtle and nuanced. The looks between all of you where it's clear what you're thinking, but nobody's speaking. There's that little moment when you have been saved and you're in the little village hut and the horses look at you and smell you and don't want to be around you guys. That's an amazing, and they don't make a big meal out of it. They don't even really explain it, but you know what it is. It's a marvel.
Yeah, the director plays a lot with movements and with the looks and the way people look into things. And even I didn't notice that until he explained me, and I watched it on the second time I saw the movie. It's when we are at the top of the mountains over there, and I tell Roberto, okay, you see those mountains very far away. We have to get there. And the director makes the actor, Roberto's actor, to look at me, no to the mountains. And he says, that explains that Roberto, when he's looking at me, he says, this guy is, I have to go with him. You know?
It's a very powerful, that's the most powerful. And by the way, and I absolutely noticed that. Him looking at your character, saying, basically agreeing to go with you is just spectacular. It's those actors are spectacular. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Rob. We could speak for hours about this.
Hours, I know.
And because
please come to Los Angeles. Please come to Los Angeles, and I would love to take you to dinner, and I'd love to get to know you better.
I'm going to Los Angeles next week.
Oh, that's, by the way, that's one of my favorite parties, things of this, is like you are clawing your way out of the Andes and eventually it leads you to the red carpet of the Oscars. You can't say,
I love the second part of My Only Life. I suffered a lot. I suffered a lot, more than anybody can think. And I've been blessed with a lot of consolations. And I've been blessed with a second part of my life, which I created. I created this script of my second life. I created that script, doing my sports with my father, my businesses, my television companies, my racing cars, my wife, my daughters, my grandchildren. I created that. And being on the red carpet at the Venice Film Festival, for the first time, where the movie received the biggest applause in the history of the film festival in 50 years. 8-9 minutes nonstop. It's a big applause. And I was walking through the red carpet with my wife and I said, enjoy this. I mean, we are here. There are people that are not here. We are here because of something. So this will not happen again. So enjoy this. So we enjoyed that walk. And I told her later, yesterday, George Clooney walked this red carpet. And the day before, Brad Pitt walked in this red carpet. And we are walking here. So let's grab those moments of life. Keep on creating memories. Because they belong to us.
Thank you so much for taking, again, the time to be with us today. And we will be cheering you on for the Oscars. I have my fingers crossed, and it will be great to see you. I'll be looking for you on the red carpet. That's for sure. And I'll be looking for you as our paths cross again someday. Thank you. This was fantastic.
If you ever travel to South America, this is a beautiful country.
I would love to get there one day, for sure.
Hidden jewels.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you. That was great.
Ciao.
Unbelievable. What a man. What an energy. What a life force. What an honor it was to have Nando visit with us today, right? I mean, I hope you take away from it everything that I have, the inspiration and the warmth and the glow of the human spirit. It's an amazing thing to behold. Thank you for tuning in to Literally, and we will be back with more next week. See you then.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Sean Doherty, with help from associate producer Sarah Begar and research by Alyssa Growl. Engineering and mixing by Joanna Samuel. Our executive producers are Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Nick Liao, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross for Team Coco, and Colin Anderson for Stitcher. Booking by Deirdre Dodd. Music by Devin Bryant. Special thanks to Hidden City Studios. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Literally.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.